Many of the things that we're going to speak about today are issues that really one should speak with one's own personal Masada Kedushin. And the Masada Kedushin will go over many of the details together with you, as well as some other things that we're not going to have a chance to touch on. But nevertheless, I think that's important for every couple just to be familiar with just some of the basics, some of the things that they should be aware to perhaps bring up to the Masada Kedushin, issues that the Masada Kedushin is going to make mention of. So we'll kind of go through a little bit of some of the preparations, both things to take care of before the wedding, things at the wedding itself, to make things go a little bit smoother for everybody on this wonderful day of their wedding. Just a couple of preparations that one should be aware of beforehand. It is strongly recommended that before a couple actually gets married today, that they sign the prenuptial agreements. The prenuptial agreements that we recommend are the ones that are has been drafted by Rabbi Willig under the auspices of the Beis Din of America. It's available on the website of the Beis Din of America. Basically, the idea of the prenuptial agreement is as follows, that there are really two different parts to it. One part is where both Chosen and the Kala sign, agreeing to, if Chas V'Shalom, an issue comes up in the course of the marriage that requires to be taken care of by Beis Din, that both the Chosen and Kala agree to come to the Beis Din, in this case to the Beis Din of America, in order to be able to potentially resolve the differences. The second part of the prenuptial agreement is an obligation that the husband signs, which basically says that the husband is legally obligating himself to support his wife, which anyway the halacha requires of him. And if under the circumstances arise that the husband doesn't cooperate in terms of either coming to the Beis Din or doesn't cooperate with the workings of the Beis Din, so then the husband is obligated to pay X amount of money, which anyway would be for support, which anyway the halacha requires of him to give. The document is worded in a very, very specific halachic way to avoid any questions of what's called in halacha a get ma'usa. If a husband is being penalized and being fined in order to force him to give a get, this can throw into serious questions about the validity of such a get, which is, of course, the last thing that we would want to do is throw any questions into a potential get. So therefore, the halacha is words in such a way that is not a penalty, but rather it's just the actual obligation. And anyway, every Jewish husband is obligated to pay to his wife. An actual dollar's amount is put onto this obligation, and it's signed, and is legal and enforceable, both in terms of Beis Din as well as by in secular court. So these prenups are strongly recommended for everybody's benefit, and there are many Masada Kedushin who will not even be Masada Kedushin without them, but we clearly should require them. We should strongly recommend that the husband and the wife both sign these documents. These documents should be signed beforehand. If for whatever reason a couple was married and they weren't signed, there are similar documents, post-nups, that can be signed, but to make life easier and more efficient, so these should be taken care of before the actual wedding itself. Another important document to take care of before the wedding is a marriage license. And a person is obligated to get married civilly, legally. It's not appropriate to be Masada Kedushin without the proper legal marriage license, and therefore really very simple. Simply the couple has to go to a county clerk, take a look online where the closest place in your neighborhood is, and they both have to come with the proper identification and payment, whatever, and get the forms, which are then given to the Masada Kedushin, and right after the chuppah, the Masada Kedushin should fill out the forms appropriately, and the form should be sent back immediately. Sometimes people in the rush of the wedding, people forget to get these documents. This is really not correct. One is really not supposed to be getting married halachically before one is legally married. And one should take care of these, to return these documents promptly back to the proper civil offices, because otherwise they would have to be done over again. So again, this is something really very simple that one should not forget in the rush of all the other marriage preparations. It is something important to be aware of. Api halacha, in a sense, the most important part of the wedding is the giving of the ring. That's the kesef kedushin. The first Mishnah tells us in Maseches Kedushin that one of the methods of kedushin is through kesef. The Torah Shabbat Peh tells us that not only through literal silver, through literal kesef, but once you give anything that's called shava kesef, anything that's worth value of a pruta, and the custom has been for many, many years in our communities, so that a chasas mekadesh is kala by giving us specifically a ring. There are certain halachas that govern this kesef kedushin, that govern this ring. The one important halacha is that the ring has to belong to the chasad. Therefore, one should avoid any other types of borrowing rings and family heirlooms, these types of things. If there's a very specific situation that of using a some type of a ring that was not technically bought by the chassan with his own money, one should refer to the Masada Kedushin as to how to go about doing this properly, so that the ring api halacha actually belongs to the chassan at the time of the chuppah. The simplest way of doing it is that the chassan should go himself and he should buy his own ring. He should not use the kala's credit card to buy the ring. He should use his parents' credit card. He should buy the ring himself. If for some reason the ring is given to him as a gift, as long as it's absolutely halachically his, so then that would also constitute the kesef kedushin belonging to him. So why don't you just be careful. The last thing we want to do under the chuppah or after the chuppah sometimes, if we made a mistake and it turned out that the ring really technically didn't belong to the chassan, that's going to be problematic. So this is something that should be looked into beforehand. The ring has to be a minimum of a pruta. Pruta today is a very, very small amount, maybe a couple of pennies. So obviously any ring that's going to be used is going to be sufficient for that. The Rishonim have an opinion that appears in the first parak of Maseches Kedushin. It's a practice that we have, that we don't use rings which have fancy jewels and diamonds or anything of that nature in it. The reason for this is that there's a complicated sug in the first parak of Kedushin about a situation of a person is Mekadesh, a woman, and there's somewhat of a misunderstanding in terms of the value of the Kesef Kedushin. The woman thinks that it's worth more than it actually is, so it becomes somewhat of a complicated sugya. Does that throw into question the das of Kedushin? Halacha requires that both the chassid and the kala be fully aware of what they are doing. There shouldn't be any mekachtos, any mistaken premises taking place, and therefore to avoid any of these kinds of questions. So the Rishonim quote from Rabbeinu Tam that we have a practice not to be Mekadesh and Isha with a ring which has any jewels, any diamonds or stones on it, which could potentially lead for confusion in terms of the actual value. So therefore the custom is a very plain and simple ring, not to get involved in any of these types of questions. The halacha requires that chassan presents his kala with a ksuba. Without a ksuba, without a proper ksuba, so then the chassan and the kala are not even permitted to be together. They really shouldn't even be beichud, shouldn't even be really in a situation of being in the same home together without having a proper ksuba. And therefore one has to make sure that this is done properly and accurately at the time of the chasana. The requirement of a ksuba is a machlokis in the Gemara, machlokis in the Rishonim, is this a din min haTorah, is this a din min derabbanan, but whatever the case may be, the halacha clearly requires that the ksuba be done, the ksuba be filled out properly. Some people like to have a pre-made ksuba, a very fancy, expensive type of ksuba. I'm not the biggest fan of that. I'm not saying that it's usur, I'm just saying that I'm not the biggest fan of it, for a few reasons that experience has shown that very often when you have, I don't want to put any of the people who write fancy ksubas out of business, chas v'shalom, but experience has shown that when sometimes in the fancy ksubas you tend to sometimes get a mistake, sometimes there'll be a misunderstanding as to the proper spelling of the name or the place or the date, whatever the case may be, and then it becomes very difficult to change it afterwards. Sometimes you have a situation where you have a very expensive ksuba, but there's some kind of a question about the validity of the ksuba, and therefore we'll have to write up a second ksuba, a cheaper, a $10 ksuba from a local sperm store, which will be the real ksuba, then this will just be the fancy artwork. Again, I don't want to put anybody out of business in terms of writing ksubas, but one should be very, very careful if one is ordering a artwork kind of a ksuba, just to make sure that everything is done 100% properly, that the Masada Kedushin is completely on top of the spelling of the names and the date and any other pertinent information, that the ksuba should be kosher. If one doesn't go the route of that kind of a ksuba. One just goes a plain and simple ksuba. So then one just goes to usually go to a regular svarim store and just get a very regular standard ksuba. Those who are in Sephardi communities, so there are different nuances, different minhagim that they have in terms of the text of the ksuba. So one who is following those minhagim in terms of is not Nusach Sephardi in terms of people daven Nusach Sephardi for davening still, but those who really come from Sephardi and Dota Mizrach communities, so should consult with their Masad Kedushin in terms of getting a proper text that would be appropriate for them. But within the standard Ashkenazi text of the Ksuba, so one could just get it simply from a regular sperm store and just show it to the Masad Kedushin just to make sure that everything is appropriate. One has to be careful when we're filling out the ksuba. Again, this is something obviously in the domain of the Masechta Kedushin, but just a little bit of preparation beforehand could go a long way. But we want to make sure that the names are spelled properly. So if there are any complications in terms of names, it would be a good idea to verify this information before the time of the Chasam's Tish. You know, if a person's name is a Moshe Ben Yitzchak or something, that's not going to be too complicated. But if there's some kind of a question as to what his name is, or there's some kind of a question as to the spelling of his name, so then one should be in consultation with the Masechta Kedushin really beforehand. There are different practices amongst Masechta Kedushin about whether to put in last names into the ksuba or not. There were some poskim who urged the putting in of last names. They recommend it for basically for technical halachic reasons. Meikir Adin, even those who wanted to have last names would agree that a ksuba without a last name would still be kosher. Sometimes it boils down just to technicality. Sometimes a person has a long, three names. Very often there's not going to be enough room on the line for a last name. So that sometimes is going to determine whether it's going to be a last name or not. Sometimes the last name it's hard to ascertain how to spell the last name. Sometimes you have different issues that Masechta Kedushin take into consideration, whether to put in the last name or not. So again, these are issues that really should be discussed, should be spoken out with the Masechta Kedushin in ample time, not to have some frantic rush at the Chasam's Tish that we're not sure what the person's actual name is. It's I always recommend that Chasam and Kalev are going to use a regular ksuba. They should always bring two to the Chasana. Sometimes you make a mistake, you want to have a backup one. So either the Chasam and Kalev should bring a backup one, or the Masechta Kedushin should have the backup one. But you're always always ready just in case you have to use a second one. In addition to the ksuba, so another document that's signed that our most of our communities have the custom of writing tenoim. The tenoim that we sign today in most of our communities are not really binding in halacha. In the olden days, in the days of the Rishonim, they used to sign tenoim, and they're still in certain Hasidic communities that still sign tenoim, which discuss actual dollars and cents and different agreements that the two sides are obligating themselves at the time of the chasana or the time of the writing of the tenoim. In what we call today Reb Moshe's Tanoim, so none of that is present. It's basically just a document that just says that both sides agreed to go through with the wedding. So those who are going to follow that practice of writing, just what we call what has become in most of our communities the standard Reb Moshe's Tanoim, so they should make sure when they go to the Svarim store to buy their ksubas, let them just ask for Reb Moshe's Tanoim, and they'll know what that is. And if you get also recommended, you might as well get a second copy of that also. So you'll have a spare just in case something goes wrong. There is some Masechta Kedushin like to fill out the ksuba and the tenoim before the actual chasana if there's time. So it just takes for a little bit of the stress at the chasana's dish. Sometimes it's not practical. Sometimes it's just not, it doesn't happen. So then it's usually going to be filled out at the chasana's dish itself. Another thing that the Chasam Kal should be aware of in terms of preparations for the wedding, all the different sets of eidim that are going to be necessary at the time of the chasana. So there are different stages of the chuppah that are going to require, pre-chuppah that are going to require eidim. So the most important eidim are the eidei kiddushin. This is the din min haTorah. The Gemara says explicitly that a mekadesh below eidim, if a person is mekadesh and isha without eidim, so the kiddushin is not valid. So these eidim are absolutely critical. That we have Eidei Kedushin. In addition to Eidei Kedushin, we require Eidei Ksuba, that two Eidim are going to sign on the Ksuba. Ksuba that's not signed on is not going to be valid. So we require two Eidim for the signing of the Ksuba as well. Then, in addition, since we have a custom of writing Tanoim,
So we have Edim who sign on the Tanoim also. Again, the whole Tanoim is not really so critical. It wasn't done, the married couple still married. But again, we have a custom to write Tanoim, so therefore it would be appropriate to have Edim. You have to have Edim Tanoim as well, obviously. And an additional set of Edim, what we call the Edim Yichud, that since after the chuppah itself takes place, the chassan and kala are taken to the yichud room. According to some opinions, that's considered to be the nisuin. The Gemara tells us that there are two parts allocately to a marriage: there's the kedushin and there's the nisuin. The kedushin is the giving of the ring. The nisuin is a later point when the chassan and kala actually, in a sense, go home together. And it's a question: what exactly that means? Does it mean they literally go home? Does it mean they have a yichud room together? Some say it means even just standing under the chuppah is good enough. There's different opinions in the Rishonim, but the custom in our we have is to have the yichud room, and therefore, according to some opinions, you require edim for the yichud as well. There are different opinions about this, but we have a custom to insist on edim yichud also. So these are the four sets of edim that are standard at pretty much all of our just about all of our chasanos. We have the edim tinoim, we have the edim kedushin, the edim ksuba, and the edim yichud. There are some inside of kedushin who have a practice of asking for edim badekin as well. That based on a different consideration, there is one opinion to be shown that the Badekin is actually the Nisuin, even though it precedes the Kedushin, becomes a whole lumpish question how that works, but that's not the discussion right now. So there are some Sadek Kedushin who will ask for another set of Edim. But I call upon the standard sets of Edim. The most important one is the Edi Kedushin, the Edi Ksuba, also required Mikra Adin. The Edi Yichud, according to some, is necessary. The Edi Tanoim, again, the Tanoim is only a minig, but Afal Pichein, we have Edim, of course, who signed the Tanoim as well. The Edim don't have to be different people. They can be the same people, but usually we like to spread out the Kibudim. Sometimes you have a situation where there aren't that many people who are kosher to be Edim, so you may have to double up and use the same Edi Kedushin, Edi Ksub, Edi Ksub, Edi Yichra, and there's nothing wrong with that. But most people end up trying to get as many people in as possible. What are some of the requirements for Edim? So there are the general requirements that exist in all Luchos Edus in the Torah, that Edim, only men are acceptable to be Edim, women are not acceptable to be Edim for these types of purposes. In order for a person to be an aid, he has to be someone who is not a korah, someone who is not an immediate relative. There are a lot of complicated details as to what constitutes immediate relative, not immediate relative, different shittas and different opinions and different areas of halacha. We have a practice that we try to stay far away from any kinds of krovim, particularly in the realm of Edei Kedushin, which is, of course, the most important part of all the Edim. So we would not have any, obviously, any direct relatives, any siblings or any first cousins or uncles or things of that nature, but even further away, relatives, even second cousins, maybe even further than that. So again, one would have to discuss with the Masada Kedushin as to the details of that. But one should try to stay away from all relatives. When we speak about not having relatives, so that means not having people who are either related to the Chassan or to the Kala or to each other. If you have two Edim who are related to one another, that's also a problem of relatives who cannot testify. In addition, the Edim have to be people who are Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. If a person is what we call halachically a Rasha, he would not be acceptable to be an aid. What exactly does that mean? So one who is not, one who violates different Yisurim in the Torah, depending on the gradation, on the hierarchy of the Yisur, will potentially be labeled as a Rasha. Just some common examples: if a person is Mechalel Shabbos, so he is possible to be an aid. If a person doesn't eat kosher, he's possible to be an aid. If a person is dishonest, a person is a ganav in any shape or form, he is also possible to be an aid. One has to be careful that the people who are serving as aidim are people who are basically shomer Torah mitzvahs completely, in the sense of they're honest, they're not ganavim, they're not Mechalel Shabbos, they don't violate other types of isurim. So such people should be chosen to be the edim for all the different types of edim. In addition to the kibudim of edim, so there are a series of other kibudim that are given out during the course of the Chasana, and people should just be aware some of it, some of the quote unquote hierarchy in Kibbutzim is not written in stone, it's not Halacha Moshe Mesinai, but people generally associate certain Kibbutzim as being more significant than others, whether their association is correct or not, maybe we'll point out as we go along. But usually the quote-unquote highest kibbutz is considered to be the Masada Kiddushin. So the Masada Kiddushin, as we said before, is the one who's going to be responsible for all the decisions that take place, the halachic decisions that take place around the chuppah and immediately before and immediately afterwards. So that obviously the person who's Masada Kiddushin should be someone who is a barachi, someone who is a competent rav, who is familiar with the dinim of how to be Masada Kiddushin properly. After the Masada Kiddushin, so we mentioned the different kibbutz with the Eidim, but then you have the kibbutz of reading the Ksuba. Now, technically speaking, the reading of the Ksuba is not really, really halachically necessary. The reason why we read the Ksuba in the first place was a throwback to the olden days when they used to have Kiddushin and Nisuin as two separate stages of the wedding. In fact, it would usually be broken up by a significant amount of time, up to a year's time in the days of Chazal, between the Kiddushin and the Nisuin. And as such, there are different brachas that are recited at the time of the Kiddushin, different brachas that are recited at the time of the Nisuin. The bracha of Asher Kiddushonu Mitzvayseh Mitzivanu Al Arayos, that's something that's recited at the time of the Kiddushin, and then the Nisuin will recite the first set of Sheva brachas under the Chuppah. And since both of these sets of brachas are preceded by a Bar Pri HaGofen, in the olden days you had a year break between one and the other, obviously there wasn't a question of having an unnecessary Bar Pri HaGofen. Whereas today that we've combined the whole, in a sense, both parts of the marriage ceremony into one, so there is a question, a technical question, in terms of brachas, about how can I make a Bar Pri HaGofen and make another one 5 minutes later. So therefore the Rishonim instituted a custom to have a little bit of a break, have a little bit of a hefsek. And the institution was to read the Ksuba. It's not necessary to read the Ksuba in Halacha, but the custom has become to do so, to a little bit of a stall to separate between the two brachas. And for whatever reason, the reading the Ksuba has somehow in the minds of people taken on the notion that it's the greatest kibbutz there. So again, Api Halacha, it's not the greatest kibbutz. The Eidei Kiddushin is significantly more important. But again, Lafi, people's understanding somehow the reading the Ksuba has become important. So usually it's custom that it's given to somebody who's knowledgeable to read the Ksuba. That it's pretty obvious if it's a hard text to read. It's an Aramaic text without the kudos. It's not going to be so easy to read for somebody who's not proficient in it. So one should just be careful to make sure that the person who you're being mechaber with the reading of the Ksuba is able to do it appropriately. Other kibbutzim that we give out, one is the reading of the Tanoim, and again, obviously the reading of the Tanoim is obviously not halachically necessary, if the whole Tanoim is not halachically necessary, but again, once again, people consider this to be a kibbutz, and therefore one should pick somebody again who at least knows how to read it properly. Again, it's a little bit easier text to read than the text of the Ksuba, but Afal Bichain, one should just use common sense to give it to somebody who is able to read it appropriately. When it comes to these kinds of kibbutzim, then there are no requirements in terms of relatives. So then a relative could read the Ksuba, relative could read the Tanoim, that obviously wouldn't pose any problem. Then there are other kibbutzim that are given out. Those are the brachas under the chuppah. So the first two brachas, the bracha Bar Pri HaGofen and the bracha of Asher Kiddushonu Mitzvayseh Mitzvanu Arayos, those two brachas are recited by the Masada Kiddushin. According to some opinions, the Masada Kiddushin is reciting them on behalf of the Chosid, maybe even on behalf of the Kala. So that's the first kibbutzim. But then you have the other brachas, all the Sheva brachas under the chuppah, which are a whole series of other kibbutzim. So again, there are different different people are usually divided up with these brachas. There's no requirement to give them to seven different people. In fact, there are some poskim who thought that it was better for one person to say all the Sheva brachas, but in our communities, so the brachas are usually divided up to give out as many kibbutzim as possible. There are different opinions about whether it's appropriate to split up the Bar Pri HaGofen and the first of the Sheva brachas. There are some who like to give the Bar Pri HaGofen together with the second bracha, and Mikra Din, it's not necessary. Mikra Din, one can separate the brachas. One should again try to use common sense in terms of giving the brachas to someone who can at least pronounce the words properly. One should try to give the brachas to someone who is a Shomer Torah Mitzvos. if there are very specific situations that arise, so then one should consult with one's Masada Kedushin as to the proper practice. Otherwise, but again, one should try to give the brachas to someone who is who will be able to recite the brachos both in terms of technically properly as well as halachically properly as well. It's usually said that the last bracha is considered to be the greatest of the kibbutzim. Again, none of this is written in stone. The bracha charita, so usually people like to give it to someone who has a nice voice, give it a little bit of a chazonas. But again, this is not in the realm of halacha, but each of the brachas, as again, the way I practice is we usually split them up. Each one is considered to be a separate kibbut. Then after the meal, the chasen is over, then benching and shaving brachas once again are also considered to be kibbutzim. So one should again follow the guidelines that we said before. We try to find someone who is able to recite the brachas properly in those with shomer Torah mitzvahs. And again, if unique situations arise, they should be in consultation with the Masada Kedushin. Just on a little bit of just the technical grounds, not from a halachic point of view, just a little make things a little bit smoother, that the kibbudim, one should try to plan out the kibbudim in enough time beforehand that you have access to exactly who is who. One should have what the person's name is being called up, what the person's title, whatever titles you're planning on and using or not using, should be ascertained beforehand. The last thing you want to do is start running around right before the chuppah trying to figure out who is the rav of where. So this should all be planned out and written out and given to whoever's going to be doing the calling up in ample time to prepare properly. Just that also on a practical point of view, very experience has shown very often you can have all the plans in the world as to who's to get the kibbutzim, but tachlis, if a person gets stuck in traffic and it's not there on time, so then he's not going to be able to get the kibbutz. So one has to plan a little chacham in a barosho, just a little bit of common sense in sometimes juggling around kibbutzim. So if you thought the person was going to read the Tanaim and lemaisa he's nowhere near, so then well maybe he'll be an eid yichud or something. I don't know, you have to figure it out what's the appropriate way to juggle and shuffle the kibbutzim properly. So again, these are just common sense things that one should take into consideration. So again, as we began, all the decisions, all the halachic decisions that take place at a chasana should absolutely be in the realm of the Masada Kedushin. One should speak to the Masada Kedushin beforehand if they're just about general guidelines, and then any particulars should obviously be brought to the attention of the Masada Kedushin to avoid any complications at the last minute. And but just as each chassid and kala, just to be aware of just some of the basics, some of the things that take place under the chuppah and some of the preparation beforehand. So hopefully this little short shiur will be helpful, and hopefully it will enable everybody to take, just as the Gemara says, that every chasana has tension and stress, and that's normal, but if we can somehow alleviate a little bit of perhaps some of the stress and tension over some of these points that could easily be alleviated with just a little bit of planning before, a little bit of common sense, and being aware of what some of the issues are under the chuppah, so hopefully we'll be able to accomplish that.